This TFMR podcast is brought to you by your friends at JM Bullion. Visit jmbullion.com for all your gold and silver bullion needs. Greetings once again to everybody at TFMR. Hey, it's Thursday, so you know what that means. It's time for a Thursday conversation. And with all that's going on in the world the past week and a half or so with the Fed and the repo facilities that they've had to set up and how this appears to be now almost a permanent fixture, I thought of one guy when I thought, okay, who can I get to explain this to people? And I thought of David Jensen. Now, many of you are familiar with David. If you're not, he's actually the CEO of a private mining company, but he's a principal at his company, Jensen Strategic. He's an analyst, if you will. He is a market watcher, and he's one of the smartest guys I know. And so, again, when I saw this repo stuff coming to a head, David was one of the first guys I thought of because I follow him on Twitter, as you should. And he's been talking about this dollar liquidity crisis, money supply crisis on Twitter for about the last 6 months. And so I kind of connected the dots. I reached out to David, and now here he is. David, thank you for spending a few minutes with me.
My pleasure, Craig. Thank you for the kind introduction.
Just because I probably butchered it, describe everybody again your role and what Jensen Strategic is, just so everybody knows a little more about your background.
Generally provide precious metals advisory services and a big picture look at economic matters. Can follow my daily posts at Real David Jensen on Twitter. If you want to fire me a DM there or get some information, I can be reached there. My profile is posted at LinkedIn as well. So that a general description there.
Okay. Yeah. And like I said, everybody should follow David because the information you put on Twitter is not fluff. It's not just like opinions, you know, like every once in a while I put out stuff on sports and all that stuff. It's just a waste of time for people looking for metals information and you don't do that. So Real David Jensen on Twitter. I'll put that link on this page. You'll see it here at the top of the page if you want to follow David. Okay, so without further delay, David, last week this stuff started to come to a head. You know, we're now approaching the end of the quarter, but last week we're still in the middle of September, and all of a sudden these repo facilities have to open up as short-term rates are skyrocketing. I've done a good job, of explaining to people what the repo facility is. It's a little bit like a Fed pawn shop in a sense, you know, that these banks can take their collateral securities they don't want to sell and swap them with the Fed and then, you know, for cash. And then at some point in the future, the next day or a week later, they give the cash back and they get their securities back. But for you, I'm sure this is symptomatic of an ongoing problem that you've been chronicling, and that is the tightening of the money supply and this kind of dollar shortage, if you will. So I'm just going to leave it there and let you run with it and give your own explanation of what you're seeing so that it, you know, begins to make more sense to people.
Okay, just a quick summary. The repo market or the repurchase market is an overnight market. And that's a market in which not just banks, but mutual funds and other financial institutions can lend money into the market in return for a collateralized asset back. And so it's an overnight market. And as we all heard last week, pardon me, the problems blew out into the open with some, a collateralized loan for with a treasury backing it was costing 4%. And some overnight rates were running in the 8% to 10% per annum level. In addition to that, the interbank lending market, which is tracked typically by the Fed funds rate, has been showing us a signal for a very, very long time. I mean, it was started to tell us at the beginning of 2018 that there was problems. And we'll touch on that. Maybe you can post a link to that later. But it all harks back to a core problem here, Craig, and that's the fact that the Fed is blowing a credit bubble, and it's blown it to levels that most people are completely unaware of. And it does that for a prolonged period, for a secular period, and then it chops off the money supply, which is the liquidity in the system. So I just want to give a couple of numbers here for people to base the discussion on, and then we'll focus in a little bit on what the Fed's done recently. But in terms of total money stock, which is all of the deposits and physical currency, liquid currency in the U.S. economy, the number is about $14 trillion. And when we look at the total amount of debt in the U.S. system, which is a number provided by the Fed's Z1 flow of funds report, it's $72 trillion. So there's $72 trillion of debt, but there's only $14 trillion of total currency circulating in the system. So you've got a 5-to-1 leverage there. And so the Fed, in blowing a credit bubble and a credit-driven economy, when they start to tighten up on the liquidity, they cause disruptions in the economy. They cause crises and recessions. So the business cycle, which everybody refers to, is really a credit cycle. And that credit cycle is driven by Fed policy. So the first thing I'd like to talk about is a first graph. And you mentioned that you would provide a link to these graphics.
See, everybody can see these charts. So we'll list them chronologically on this page. So yeah, so follow along.
Excellent. So, I mean, going back to the late 1970s, we can see that initially when the Fed would go negative on the money supply, and the money supply, by the way, is the year-over-year increase in the money stock. So the money stock number was the $14 trillion number that I gave currently. And so the money supply is the year-over-year increase in that amount. And we can see that it used to be that the Fed would tighten into going negative on the increase in the money stock in the year-over-year change, that would cause a recession or a crisis, a credit crisis of some sort. And then what's happened now is that the Fed, in running the total current debt up to $72 trillion, given the leverage, the fact that there's five times more debt out there than there is money to pay it off, is that the sensitivity now of the economy and the financial system is so great that the Fed cannot increase the year-over-year money supply by less than 5% without triggering a crisis since 2000. And so in the second graph that I've provided there, we can see that the dot-com crash, the great financial crisis, and now what I call the great financial crisis 2, are all being triggered by this tightening of the money supply, basically chopping off of the increase in outstanding money that's needed to service the debt and to service the credit bubble that the Fed has created. And typically what happens is that there's a constriction to below 5%, and there's about a two-year lag before the actual event, if you want to call it that, both a financial market or a recession occurs. And we're now more than 2 years into this tightening, 2.5 years into this tightening, since the Fed went from roughly an 8% year-over-year run rate to a current run rate of about 3%. So it's well below that 5% increase. And that was chopped in Q1 2017 down to this level now.
So as I look at this, the first thing that comes to mind, David, is Fed policy, right? And they've tried to tell us now for 5 years that QE was, a one-off thing, and that they had it all under control, and that the balance sheet was going to normalize, and interest rates are going to normalize. And they appear to now really be in a jam, because the only way they can keep the plate spinning in this kind of debt end game is to just create more and more cash. But they're remiss to do that, because they're going to reveal themselves as not having any control.
Yeah. So I mean, it's a credit bubble. That's all it is, and everything depends on liquidity. The chart there of the money supply, I mean, that's the root of what central bankers are doing. They're varying interest rates. They're controlling rates to control the money supply. They don't talk about it. Greenspan said they don't even know what money is, and what aggregate is the correct aggregate to follow. Which, brought to mind my first question would be, well, then what do you guys think you're doing? Because if you don't even know what money is and you're varying interest rates, controlling the level of money, we're in a little bit of trouble.
Yeah.
So what they've done now is they've contracted it down to a 3% level year over year. And to give a sense of the broad impact, if they had run at the rate that they ran through till the end of 2016, at that constant 8% level, right through to now, there would be about $1.5 to $2 trillion. It's about $1.7 trillion more of liquidity in the economy. So by chopping the money supply, which is the year-over-year growth of money availability in the economy, down to the level it's at now, they've basically effected a tightening of $1.7 trillion out of the U.S. economy. And so it doesn't happen right away. Your event doesn't happen right away. You dry out the economy. The effects are greater and greater. And we're starting to see it in things like the Purchasing Managers Index and the Manufacturing Index. And all these different things are telling us that there's an event coming. And there surely is an event coming. So now the effect of this tightening washes ultimately starts to show up in the banking sector. And this is what we saw last week now, is that this tightening, that there's a refusal or not a refusal, but there's an increasing reticence to lend. And it's getting to an extreme level in the repo market, which, as I mentioned, it's any large financial institution can participate in that. But even in the interbank market, the overnight Fed funds rate has shown since the beginning of 2018 that there was increasing tightness, increasing lack of liquidity in the market. And even that rate now has blown out. So we've seen that go now to, went to 20 basis points last week.
Just the third chart.
Yeah, it's the third chart that we presented there from the Fed. And that shows the Fed funds rate minus minus the interest on excess reserves. That's a technical term, but it's what the Fed pays the banks to hold their money in the excess reserves account. Now, those two numbers had been maintaining an equilibrium for a very long time, with the Fed funds rate well below that. But we can see in that chart that red line has started to blow out. And that is an indication of the reticence of banks to lend to each other. And in a credit-driven economy, that in a very short term, if that continues, it's lights out. So, you know, we're hearing this point here from the various Fed members that they, you know, they've got a term repo facility now where they're going to lend into the market for 2 weeks, and they've got an overnight facility, and they're going to lend on an overnight basis into that, and they're going to address these issues by increasing these, and they're, you know, under $100 billion typically are the numbers that have been floated so far. But the real issue here is that the entire economy has been shorted this, call it lifeblood, or this credit money availability that's been going on a yearly basis. And so these lending facilities into the market, I refer to it as providing more repo into the market, and lowering the interest on excess reserves to try to provide liquidity, is really like painting over cracks in a dam face. If you've got a dam with extreme water pressure behind it and you're starting to see cracks, you know, you don't apply more paint to the dam to cover up the cracks. You deal with the water pressure. And the analogy in this case is that the water pressure that we're starting to see, the failure of this financial dam, is the fact that the liquidity in the U.S. economy, which is essential to continue this credit-driven, bubble-driven economy, which has been created over, you know, 40 years of Fed policy, cannot be met by providing more repo or by lowering interest rates. Now, the effects have gone on for too long, and the economic impact is embedded now. They're not going to be able to address it that way, Craig.
And David, would you say it's a global issue too? I was talking to Jim Rickards last week in an interview. And I mean, he gave kind of rough, rounded numbers, but he said, look at it this way. Since the financial crisis, the Fed has created $4 trillion in currency, if you will, but the global amount of debt that's dollar denominated has gone up by $100 trillion.
Yeah, it is a global problem in terms of when the Fed starts to tighten. I mean, the U.S. dollar is the primary currency for global trade and is a reserve currency. So when you've got U.S. dollar lending, and for instance, you see the problems in China now, they've got a $3 trillion debt and currency swap problem in U.S. dollars. And so as soon as the Fed starts to tighten like this, and then you compound it with rebalancing trade, which I think Trump is rightly doing, is it really leads very, very rapidly to crisis. And so it is absolutely a global problem that's being introduced here. And we see economies like Germany starting to tumble because they are export driven. A huge amount of their GDP is driven by exports. And certainly when you constrict the liquidity and availability of the primary unit of international trade settlement, you're going to impact these heavily trade dependent economies first.
So then, David, at the end of the day, and as this relates to physical gold and physical silver ownership and, you know, protection against fiat debasement and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just showing us, and it takes a little while for everybody to figure it out and let it all play out. But once they started down this road, it really was that QE forever, you know, the QE mm-hmm. to infinity. I mean, there's no turning back, basically, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, they can start QE again, but it's these problems are impacted and embedded into the U.S. economy, and they can light up the QE again. But what we're seeing now is that these problems are really a consequence of 2.75 years now of Fed policy of constricting credit into a credit bubble.
Yeah,
and monetary policy doesn't have an overnight effect. It takes years. And so, we're seeing banking crisis like right now.
Would it almost take, I mean, the term is helicopter money, you know, MMT kind of just outright cash creation. I'm trying to figure out the way, I mean, there really is, I don't know, how do they affect this? How do they change?
They'll probably end up doing that. But I mean, what's been very clever is how they term things like quantitative easing. What they're implying with that term is that it's a fixed amount and it's a one-time thing and it's a problem solution, right? Helicopter money, you start to do things in the open like that, which they will have to do, is that you're going to start a run for the things that you can't print, which is, you know, energy, food, fiber, strategic assets like refineries. These things become very, very valuable because you get enough, and you don't need all investors. You just need a few percent of them to run to these assets of intrinsic strategic value. And so that's what we risk here, is that, you know, they can light it up and they can do MMT and they can do QE and, you know, they can lower it, go back into all kinds of the tools that they were using back in the last financial crisis. But the signal that they send is that they are as reckless as people had perceived, and really that what they were practicing was witchcraft, not a science.
Yeah.
And they've been doing that. They've been covering it up. You know, Mark Faber calls them the money printers. And that, if you want to distill it down, they are the money printers. And that's what they've been doing. And that's what they will continue to do. Their solution to everything is that you need more debt, because we have a debt-driven money system.
Is there any other conceivable way out?
Restructuring of the monetary system.
Yeah.
You're going to have to issue a new currency and issue it at multiples the amount of currency that's there right now. But hopefully it'll be a sound monetary unit. But basically, it's a debt write down versus GDP.
Right.
Just to give you a sense, Craig, the historic level of debt was about 150% of GDP last century. That was what it was prior to 1980. And we've been running, we're about 340 now in the US and over 400% of GDP here in Canada.
Crazy.
So we've got to write down the debt. And the way you do it is issue a new sound currency that these money printers can't get at. And you issue it at multiples of the current currency so that you effectively write down the amount of debt that's out there versus GDP.
In the meantime, they're going to do what they've always done. I mean, that's, I would think, a ways away. They're just going to print and create more fiat. And that obviously has long-term implications for us.
Yeah, I mean, an adult needs to stop them. And the question is, who's the adult to do it? And we'll have to see. But maybe it's all of us. I don't know. But it's got to stop, because what's going to happen the next time here is going to be a credit market seizure and financial market seizure. And it's going to be multiples of difficulty of the last time, because interest rates are so low. The debt level is so much higher. And the facilities that they've used in the past have basically lost their effectiveness because of the public at large understanding that it's really a monetary fraud that's going on.
Yeah. The end of the great Keynesian experiment. David, I would be remiss, though, if we didn't close by discussing palladium. Man, you and I, we discussed this several times earlier this year as palladium was moving to all-time high at 1600. It then and there was all sorts of signs of physical stress in London. Then it fell back, and then it appeared to double top at 1600.
Yeah,
as it fell back, and now here we are blasting through 1600, and lease rates are moving higher again, indicative of supply pressures. Just your thoughts on palladium and could it, you know, still be a magic bullet in exposing the fraud of the fractional reserve pricing scheme?
Yeah. Okay. Well, precious metals, the four major precious metals, gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, they're traded with these unallocated contracts, which are promissory notes. And that's how they contain the pricing, is by having paper pricing. And you can create infinite promises. Therefore, you can create infinite metal in the market. And they can use that to sell it down. Now, that scheme only works while physical metal circulates. You can set the price anywhere that you wish, as long as the market is generally unaware and generally satiated with the real thing. And so what we're seeing with some of these more, we'll call them minor metals, but the smaller precious metals, to give everybody a sense here, I mean, the palladium market is about 8.5 million ounces a year of mine production. And there's one that's even smaller. It's rhodium. And I mean, that metal, they're both palladium and rhodium. Their primary application is in catalytic converters. Now, the reason I mentioned rhodium, it sounds a bit obscure, but I'll send you a link there to the info mine, which lists the price. But the price of that metal has gone from $600 to about $5,300 today in the last, 3 years.
Yep.
And rhodium is interesting because it isn't exchange traded. It's just sold by metal brokers. So what you're getting there is a pure supply and demand signal out of that market. What happens when the money printers start to offer things like negative rates is that at the margins, enough people can see what's going on with negative rates and that they're really having their buying power destroyed by central banks, is that they start to buy rare, valuable strategic assets. And rhodium is giving it has a higher fidelity price signal because it's actually, the price is set by brokerages reflecting supply and demand. And so it's gone up now, 9 times in the last 3 years. Palladium has gone up 3 times. And what we're seeing, Craig, even though it's a paper market, is that we've seen that lease rate in London spike, and I posted the lease rate day before yesterday on Twitter, but we're seeing that price went to over 20% last year, and now it's turned back up again. It's over 7%, and the lease rate reflects the availability of physical metal for lending in the market, so it's a tightness measurement, whereas the price typically isn't. That we see for gold, silver, platinum, palladium, it's just a paper trading artifact. But with this physical availability being constricted in London of palladium now, we're starting to see the price turn around, and it's run really materially, and it's broken out to all-time highs now. So what I think is going to happen, Craig, is that the tightest metals are going to fail first as this money printing experiment continues to go awry. And the most rare of the metals in terms of market availability start to disappear first. And you'll start to see the paper price fly on these things. Now, what happens in the extreme, though, is that as the metal availability becomes constricted, is that in the end that these markets will fail because it becomes apparent that what's circulating is paper and not metal, and the run for the physical goes on. So we may see really a round trip in prices here as they go incredibly high. And then as these markets fail and are revealed as being promissory note platforms, the price plunges dramatically and we have a new exchange ultimately set up. And that's where people can source these assets then. They're assets for which they're it's nobody else's liability, right? So this is why people like them, is that they can't be printed and it's not a promise. It's a physical asset.
The only thing I have to ask you about is that plunge back down. I mean, if it's revealed that there isn't nearly as much palladium as the futures and forward market in London would have you believe, I can understand price being bid up as the banks and everybody else is short as squeeze. But the return to a physical market, is that, and price going lower, is that just because it gets so outdone to the upside first?
Well, no, I think that there's just an abandonment of a fraudulent market. I mean, we saw in 1980 in the Kuwait, what was called the Kuwait camel market. But, the Kuwait equity market became, I think, the third largest by market cap in the world. And then one day, nobody showed up at the market. And it's just that it became so apparently fraudulent that everybody just kind of walked away from it. And I think ultimately that's what's going to happen, is you're going to have the establishment of real gold markets, which I hate to say it, but the Shanghai Gold Exchange appears to be the real thing. And it's funny to have a communist country like that providing a fidelity in something like precious metals trading, where we're running a completely fraudulent one. But you're going to see movement to basically sound exchanges where they're providing the real metal, and the pricing and the availability of metal is based upon actuality as opposed to a Truman type show.
Yeah, and I think we'll all take our chances with whatever that is compared to the fraudulent fractional reserve system that the banks run now.
I do see this start now. It's kind of the toe, if we can close on that, but really the toe of the run up now in precious metals appears to be starting, and it appears to be starting with rhodium and palladium. I would expect a migration. Platinum I'm unsure about, but I would expect a migration to silver in short order, and then ultimately gold. So we'll see how it goes.
Yep. Well, all right, my friend. Thank you. I mean, just really, really appreciate it. I think that is a great primer, a great explanation, a great starting point for people trying to get their arms around what all of this means, and then how it ultimately impacts the precious metals too, and the economy and everything else. So, David, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I got a sneaky feeling we may have to talk again sometime soon.
Sounds good. Thank you, Craig.
And thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll have another Thursday conversation next week.